As most of you know, yesterday we spent quite a bit of time making connections in our addition out here. Our connections we made were electrical connections, and we were endeavoring to get things connected so we could have receptacles that worked and lights that come on when you turn the switch on. And as Anita's mentioned earlier, I'm very thankful for the progress that we made. We did make a lot of progress, and I'm very happy with the way the lights look, and it's just a real blessing to have those kind of things done. We don't have it all done yet, but I'm also very thankful this morning for inspiration. The Lord knows about the busyness of all of our lives. He knows all about our responsibilities, and I'm so glad that He can give us inspiration in the midst of our everyday duties and tasks, and when we feel like we're overwhelmed with everything going on around us and we just don't know, Lord, how do we be prepared for service and all of that. I feel like the Lord can give us inspiration, and that's what happened to me yesterday as we was working. I've been very busy this past week, and I've been asking the Lord, what do I have? I want to have something that you can put your stamp of approval on for the people. One of the things we find when we're making connections that it's important to be connected to the power source. I was hooking up some of the lights and realized that the way we had run the wires, if we didn't have some other things connected, we wouldn't have any power to the lights. So it's important that we not just have something in place, but that we have it connected to the power source. If our lights were not connected to the power source, they would not come on. They would not do what we want them to do. Some connections are a lot easier to make than others. Now, we had some receptacles that we were putting in yesterday that we got to set on a little bench, and they was just perfect height. You could just sit there, and it was almost like an office job. And then there were the others that the only way that I could see with my glasses is I had to lay down in the floor and turn my head just right and look back in this box to be able to make the connections. And then we had some of those that when we were trying to make connections and I started unrolling the wires and pulling them out of the box, I had this happen 3 times on me yesterday. As I rolled it out, one of those wires just felt extra weak. And I just turned it a couple times and it broke off. And it was up in the box a little ways. And I thought, oh, Lord, how are we going to connect this? You know, you don't want your wire to break off. Anyway. And then we had some issues where things were shorted together. We had a little setback. We thought we had a bad wire and all of that kind of thing. But, you know, some connections are more difficult. That's the point I want to make, than others. But if you don't persevere in the times of the difficult connections, then the end result won't happen. But we have to persevere in the times of the connections. And I'm thinking about this morning the connections that we need to be able to make with God. And I'm thinking also about the desire that we have to have connections in our world. Did you know that connections can really take you places if you have the right connections? I know Drew went with some folks from the Farm Bureau Insurance here some time back up to visit our state capitol. And when he goes up there, because of the connections he had, he was able to go behind the scenes, you might say, and visit the private offices of some of the representatives. Am I right, Drew? That if he'd have just walked in as Drew and he hadn't have been with the connection, he would have never got to see that. But because of the connection he had, the people that he was with, he was able to visit some places in our state capitol that he wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. I remember one time, I think maybe the children were very small. I don't know. Trenton may have been just a couple years old or something. We went down and visited the area where I grew up and walked into the a cotton gin down there. And because I had graduated with the person that was kind of the office manager or whatever there, got to talk to them, and they said, "Have you seen our newest gin?" And, of course, no, I haven't seen the new cotton gin, and that's been a number of years ago now. She said, "Well, why don't you come over here? You might know the fellow that's the, I don't know what they call him. He's in charge of the whole ginning operation." Well, walked in there, and yes, I knew this guy. I'd known him from the time I was a little bitty person. So by the connections we knew, he took us all around in there and showed us how things were working. And, you know, if you hadn't had that connection, you wouldn't have been able to see that. You wouldn't have got inside where all that machinery was going. It's too dangerous. But because you have some connections, we was able to be in there. I was thinking about a story that we have in the Bible about someone that put some effort into making some difficult connections with someone in high authority. And this story in the Bible is probably has more drama in it than any other story that we find in the Scripture. I've read most of this book of the Bible between last night and this morning, just kind of skimmed through it. And I want to tell you, it amazes me every time I read some of this at the level of drama that's going on. You think you got drama in your life, you need to check this book out in the Bible. Anybody know what book I'm talking about? Huh? No? It's Esther. Let's turn to the book of Esther. You know what the first chapter of the book of Esther is all about? It's about a king having a big banquet and extolling all of his authority and powers and putting on a big show. And now this wasn't no small event. They did it for 180 days. That's 6 months, right? So what do you think about having a six-month party? That's what they did. And after they finished with that, he had a smaller party, you might say, for his immediate advisors and all of that. And during the course of all of this, he asked, and his wife, or the queen, was having a banquet for her attendants and all of that. And in amongst all of this, he decides, the seventh day, I believe it was, the last day of it, he decides to have the queen come in and be on display for the folks that was with him. Now, she was, by the scriptural account, she was a very beautiful woman. And I know there's lots of thought about how he asked her to come and present herself and all that. But the bottom line was she refused to come. And there ensued a lot of drama. Now, there was a lot of fanfare going on all this during all this time. And the king asked the queen to come in, and because she didn't, the drama that ensued was he was getting counsel from his counselors of how he ought to respond to this and the precedence that it was going to set amongst the kingdom and how that the wives of the other men, that it would, if he didn't do something, it was going to cause a ripple effect. And it's drama now. It's on the front burner. It's a lot of drama. So he decides to dispose of the queen, and that led to the opportunity for there to be a new queen selected. Now, the second chapter of the book of Esther is one of the chapters that I'm going to tell you is very difficult for me to put myself in the place that Mordecai was in. And I have told people, and I'll say it from this perspective or from this place today, if I was in the same position and there was a opportunity for my daughter to be amongst those that would be selected as the queen, if I knew what I think Mordecai knew about the selection process, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. Because I would not want to subject my daughter to that. Now, my understanding is, if I read this correctly, that Esther was most likely Mordecai's cousin. She was the daughter of Mordecai's uncle. So if that is just the way it says it is, it would make her his cousin. But she was like a father to him, and he encouraged her to, you might say, endeavor to be the queen. And she was put in with all of the other young ladies that came for this opportunity. And when it came her time to be presented to the king, it ended up she was selected as the queen. Now, the peculiar thing about this is the time period we're talking about is approximately 100 years before Alexander the Great became in power and established the Greek Empire. So they were living under the power of the Persian Empire. This king was not a Jewish king. He was the king of Persia. And he was a very, very powerful. The scripture says he ruled from India to Ethiopia. That was a large, all the known world, you might say, at that time. So, a very powerful man. She became a very powerful woman because she was his queen. And she became, not only was she the queen of to the Persian king, a Persian emperor, but she was a Jewish young lady. And her people were of those that were a part of a subculture, we would probably say today, that lived in the Persian Empire. And as we look on this situation, Mordecai encouraged her and he gave her a lot of counsel. He said, don't let anyone know who your people are. And you just go in there and be yourself. I feel like you've got the capability to be the queen, but you just be yourself and don't tell the king or anyone else what your connection is with me or who your people are. That she was a Jew. So she did that. She was selected as a queen, and at the end of the second chapter, we find a situation that happened after she was established as the queen, and Mordecai was a person that was kind of like someone that took care of guarding the gate or so. I'd like to read beginning in verse 21 of chapter 2 of the book of Esther. It says, in those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gate, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth, and sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. Now, he sat in the king's gate. I don't know what all his responsibilities were, but my guess is that he was kind of some type of security official. His purpose was to keep an eye on who came in and who went out. And they didn't have surveillance cameras and all of that, but he was kind of in charge of that. And there was two of the king's chamberlains, these two men, probably didn't say their names right, which kept the door. They were responsible maybe for opening and closing the door. They got a bee in their bonnet. They were wroth. They were mad. They began to be angry at the king, and they began to talk about laying hands on the king. They were talking about assassinating the king. I told you there was a lot of drama in this story. And the thing became known to Mordecai. He heard them talk about it, overheard it. It was told him. Somehow he got the word, and he told it to the queen. And Esther, the queen, certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. In other words, she went, somehow communicated it to the king and said, look, I've got word for Mordecai, the man you've got in charge of, I'm going to say security out there. And he is of the, he has been made aware that these two men, these two chamberlains, are plotting to kill you. So it says, and when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out thereof they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. So in other words, they recorded this whole thing in, I guess, their record book, whatever that was, that these two men had plotted to kill the king. Mordecai had let them know, and now they had... It's all written down. They checked it out. Yes, that's what they were intended to do, and the men were executed because of that. Well, we got two connections now. Esther is a Jew, and she's the queen. And the other connection is Mordecai has been looking out for the well-being of the king. He's a Jew also. And in this setting, he is, you might say, got his, made a connection with the king that he's a trustworthy, reputable person. He has the best interest of the king, although he's part of a subculture that lives in his kingdom. He's a person that's, you might say, under, they're not the privileged of the kingdom, all right? They're the ones that's underprivileged, we might say. All right, if we go over to the third chapter, we find some more drama. We find that Mordecai refused to bow down to a man called Haman. Haman was a man that was promoted to be almost like vice president. He was up there above all of the other advisors. And it says that he was an Agite. Does that ring any bells with anybody? Well, a few years, not a few, but a bunch of years before, there was a command that God sent who? Saul, the first king. He said, I want you to go down and destroy and utterly wipe out some people called Amalekites. You remember that? And Saul did, but he didn't kill the king, and the king's name was Agag. So the king's name was Agag, and Saul didn't do that, but Samuel had to come in and clean it up. You remember that story? So many people feel like that Haman was a descendant of Agag. Now, let's stop. You're talking about drama. This is a big time drama here. Amalekites were cursed of God, were they not? Do you think that Haman knew that? I think he knew it. Do you think that Mordecai knew that? Yeah, I think he did. He was a Jewish descendant. He knew these Old Testament stories. I know Esther is back there before Psalms, but it really happened over there at the very end chronologically, if we remember our study about the Old Testament scriptures. So here Mordecai is, and this Haman, this descendant of Agag, has been promoted to one of the highest rulers in the land, and Mordecai cannot bring himself to bow to Haman. And Haman is one of these arrogant people that wants everybody to bow to him because he knows he's almost the king, so to speak. And he couldn't do it. So it caused problems, more drama. All right. So Haman became very, this is the third chapter if you want to read it. Haman became very distressed about this, and he began to plot how to get rid of Haman, but not just Haman himself. He's going to get rid of all of the Jewish people. Now, why would you think he would want to do that? Because he knew that the God of heaven had intended to not let him live. He was the descendant of someone that God said, wipe them out. Back when Israel came in. Stay with me. I'm going somewhere with all of this. This chapter, the third chapter of Esther, ends with the king giving Haman the authority to do whatever he desires to get rid. And he comes to the king and he tells his story like they've got this rebellious subculture of people that's living amongst them. And they don't have the best interests of the king in mind. And he says, I want us to be able to just clean house and get the kingdom all cleaned up. We need to get rid of all these people. And the king finally, he's trusting Haman, and he says, whatever you decide to do. So Haman sends out a decree that at a certain day, all of the people of the kingdom was supposed to be able to, you just go ahead and attack any Jews that you know that are Jews, you just attack them and kill them and take all their stuff. He was going to turn the whole nation against these particular people. And that he knew that was going to take care of Mordecai. But because he didn't know that the queen was a Jew too, he didn't know the connections that were made. And you know, I want you to think about how risky it was for Mordecai to suggest that Esther ever even try to become queen. It was risky business. And I've already told you my perspective. If I'd have been in Mordecai's position, I don't know that as someone playing the role of a father would have been willing to, I don't know if I'm talking about who I am, would have been willing to take the risk of making that connections, of giving this young lady that is in my charge as a daughter to possibly becoming the queen. Because it was not a good situation for her to become the queen. All right? But she did. And the connection was made. Mordecai was true to his office. He warned the king. Now, in the fourth chapter, Mordecai gets word of all this decree. And he pleads with Esther, go intercede with the king. Now you remember, I'm your daddy, kind of. And it's not just that. It's your people. This is your people. Yes, I know you're the queen now, but he's appealing. This is your people that's fixing to be slaughtered. And he says, don't think you'll escape just because you're the queen. Because you're Jewish too. Now, you talking about some drama? This is it. Better than any soap opera somebody might think of out there. So, Mordecai needed the connection that had been made. You know, we're going to need some connections at the end of our life. And Mordecai needed this connection that had been made now. And at the end, we find Esther being willing to say, I'll go talk to the queen, or to the king. And if she knew that if she went in there and was not accepted, it could mean her life. And she made that commitment, and her words were, if I perish, I perish. Now that's a real commitment, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
I'd like to turn to Esther, the fourth chapter. I'm going to read a few verses. In Esther, the fourth chapter, we'll begin reading in the fifth verse. He says here, "Then called Esther for Hatak, one of the king's chamberlains, whom he had appointed to attend upon her, and gave him a commandment to Mordecai to know what it was and why it was. So Hatak went forth to Mordecai into the street of the city, which was before the king's gate, and Mordecai had told him of all that had appointed unto him, and the sum of money that Haman had promised to pay to the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them. Also he gave him the copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, to shew it unto Esther, and declare it unto her, and to charge her that she should go in unto the king, to make supplication unto him, and to make request before him for her people. And Hatak came and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Again Esther spake unto Hatak, and gave him commandment unto Mordecai." So all I want to do is establish the word, the what it says in the scripture of how Mordecai got the word to her, and how that Mordecai was communicated back to. In the fifth chapter of Esther, we have where Esther invites Haman and the king to the banquet that she wants to have, and she invites them to come. So they, after he got the invitation, you remember what Haman did? He went home that night. Now, I'm telling you, this man was feeling like life was going his way. He went home that night, and he invited all his friends. They had a little family reunion, maybe it was a big one. They all came over to his house, and he began to extol how, oh, he was feeling so good, and he told them all that he had his accomplishments in life, and all he talked about all his wealth that he had accumulated, and how things were going his way. You know, obviously the king had gave his approval for him to do what he needed to get done and get rid of all of these scummy Jews and all of those things. And he said, and to top it all off, I've been invited to have a private meal with the king and the queen. Now just think of that. So he did. And you remember how that went? Esther said, the king says, what do you want? What can I do for you? And Esther said, can you just come back tomorrow? Do you just come back for another meal? Now, I don't know about you, but if I was the king, I knew something was up. You know something's up. This is big drama now. And the king goes back to his quarters that night, and guess what? He couldn't sleep. He couldn't sleep at all that night. And Haman, he went home just skipping along, and he was so excited, and he was going again to have a banquet with the king and the queen. And his wife says, you know what I would do? She said, he told her, he said, the only thing that's any little snag in my joy and my happiness is this Mordecai fella. And the queen, his wife advised him, well, you know, everything's going your way. Why don't you just build a gala 65 feet high out here? And when you go to see the king tomorrow, why don't you just ask him if you can personally hang Mordecai on it? I mean, the way things are going, you know he's going to say yes. And all this time, during the night, the king can't sleep. And you know what he had them do? He had the folks that kept all the records bring out the books. And they began to reading about how his life had been spared because Mordecai had warned him about these two thugs that was going to plot to assassinate him. And just before Haman got there, he says, well, what's been done to honor this man? And they said, nothing. Absolutely nothing has been done to honor this man that saved your life. And about that time, he realized somebody was out there waiting in the court. And he said, who's out there? And they said, well, Haman's here. Probably came early that day because of what he had on his mind. So then he says, well, just tell Haman to come on in. Let's turn to the sixth chapter, and we're going to read the sixth verse. He said, so Haman came in, and the king said unto him, what shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor? Now Haman thought in his heart, to whom would the king delight to honor, to delight to do honor more than to myself? Haman just jumped to the conclusion that I'm the person that he's wanting to honor. And so, you remember what he said. He said, why don't you just dress him up like he was the king and let him sit on your animal and have one of your people of authority go before him and shout in the middle of the street and say, this is the man that the king would like to honor. And the king says, you know, I like that idea. He said, why don't you just do that to Mordecai? And don't you know, Haman would have, if he could have, he'd have just crawled underneath the woodwork at that time. He felt about this high. He wanted to be the one dressed up in the king's robe. He's the one that wanted to ride the king's horse. He's the one that he wanted somebody to go around and shout before him, look at this guy, he's the fellow the king wants to honor. But instead, he was doing it to the very man that he went in to ask if he could hang him. The very man. And after, don't you know he was wore out? And after all of that, he went home. And his wife told him, says, I'm afraid you're in trouble. And the seventh chapter of Esther is a story where the queen exposes Haman's plot to kill not only the Jews, but Mordecai and her. And I believe that Haman up to that point had been ignorant that she was a Jew. And the king became so angry that he went out into the garden. And while he was out there, Haman, it said, was leaning on the bed that Esther was laying on. And when the king come back, he found him in that position. And that was the last straw. That was the last straw. In the eighth chapter, we find that the king gave the house of Haman, gave it to Esther the queen, and Mordecai became the overseer of that. Mordecai became a person probably with more respect and more authority than Haman ever had. And it was at the suggestion of one of Esther's chamberlains that Haman was hung on the very gallows that he had planned for Mordecai. All of this happened, and the people of the Jewish people were spared because of the connection that Mordecai had made in a very difficult time. All because Esther had been willing to say, if I perish, I perish. But the connection was made. And because of the connection, although it was under adverse circumstances, her people were spared. And not only was this descendant of Agag, but all of his sons ended up perishing too. There was a final closure, if I can say it that way, to God's curse on the Amalekites. All right? And because this happened, or this did happen, because of the connection that Mordecai was able to establish. And here's what I would like to say to us today. We have an eternal responsibility to make connection with God and keep a good connection with God. And if we fail to make the proper connection. You know, an improper connection causes lots of troubles. Ultimately, it can cause disaster. It can a loose connection in our electrical system causes heat. And heat causes fire. And fire causes destruction. And if we don't have any kind of poor or improper connection, can lead to disastrous things in our electrical world, in our mechanical world, or whatever. And I'm going to tell you, a bad connection with God is going to be disastrous. We have to make the connection, but it also has to be a good connection. Esther was willing to say, I'll go. I'll talk to the king. If I perish, I perish. I want you to realize today the importance of us making a good connection. Maybe you don't feel like it's... Maybe you feel like the one that told the Apostle Paul, almost you persuade me to be a Christian. Maybe you're in that place today. And you say, almost. I think it's a good idea to be a Christian. I see people that have given their hearts to the Lord, and I think that's a good plan, and I think it's a good thing for them, but I don't know if it's for me yet. I'm going to tell you, folks, it's time for us to make a good, solid connection with God. If you got one, keep it. If you don't have one, get one. If there's any kind of, you know, it's time to check your connections. And make sure that they're solid. Make sure that you've got a clean connection. One of the big issues in my line of work many times is just the connection to the battery, to the power source. I remember years ago having a car towed in, wouldn't start. The guy that came out there, we raised the hood, and you know, both battery cable ends looked like some kind of science fair experiment. Just all kinds of stuff growing on it. And he said, you know, let's don't do anything but clean the battery cables and see if it'll start. Now I thought, there's got to be something else wrong. I know this don't look good. But all I did was carefully take that cable off, clean the connection out, put it back on, the car started. It wouldn't do anything before. Because of what? A connection that had become corroded and contaminated. You know, there's a lot of things out here in this world that will corrode and contaminate our connection with God. And I'll tell you something, dear ones. We're going to get down to the end of life's way. And if our connection is not good, it's not solid. And if we know there's something that needs to be taken care of in our life and we don't do it, we're going to get down there to the end and it's not going to work. It's not going to work. We're going to stand before God and He's going to look at us and He's going to say, why didn't you fix your connection? I don't know what words He's going to say, but that's what He's going to basically say. Well, you had time on your hands. Why didn't you fix your connection? Why didn't you make the connection? I know it looked risky. I know it looked like you was going to lose some of the things you enjoyed in life. I know it looks like you was going to postpone some things. I know what it's like to be young and feel like my future is going to be sabotaged by making a connection with God. I know what that feels like. I know what it feels like to be middle-aged. I know what it feels like to be a young married person and think, you know, if I put the Lord first in my life, if I try to make that connection good, look at what I'm sacrificing. Maybe I could advance and be more profitable in whatever area of my life. But I know this. And when we make a good, solid connection with God, we're going to have something that works when we get to the end of our life. And we'll be able to meet God in peace and hear Him say, well done, thou good and faithful servant. I would like to read something in Matthew, the 16th chapter, in closing. And I know this is important because not only was it recorded in the Gospel of Matthew, but it was recorded in Mark and Luke too. I'd like to read it in Matthew, the 16th chapter, and we're going to read the 24th verse. Matthew 16 and 24. And He says here, Jesus' words, "Then said Jesus unto His disciples, if any man will come after Me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow Me." You know what that tells me? That we're going to have to make a connection with God, even if it's difficult. Even if it looks like our wire broke off on us. Even if it looks like it's taken the risk of our the morality of our descendants being jeopardized. Even if it looks like that, we're going to have to make the effort in the difficult looking situations to make a connection with God. And when we have a connection with God, we're going to have to fight against everything around us that would cause that to be deteriorated and corroded and contaminated, because a connection with God is the most important thing that we can do. And when the time gets tough, you know, it looked like that Haman had authority to wipe out the Jews. And it looks like in our world today that Christianity is becoming more and more and more unpopular. That's what it looks like. Not just over there in some third world country or some Islamic country. It looks like that in our United States. We've had a leader now that has said, we are not just a Christian nation, we're a nation of many religions. You know what that's done? That's made a change in the atmosphere and in the context of people's thinking, to the point that they consider Christianity just one of many. And it's only a matter of time before we're going to be in a position of being that subculture that somebody says, I think it's time to get rid of them. We don't need them in this country any longer. They cause us to feel guilty and condemned. You need to read that whole book of Esther with these kind of things in our mind. But it's time, folks, that we have a connection for ourselves with God. If we don't have that connection, the likelihood of us being exterminated spiritually and possibly literally becomes more of a reality. May the Lord help us to have a good connection. Pray for me.